Game marketing is hard, but fortunately, this episode is packed with game marketing wisdom from Chris Zukowski, operator of the game marketing goldmine that is howtomarketagame.com.
You're listening to Make the Game with Matt Hackett.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for being here today. It's great to have you.
Great. Glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Awesome. So I started discovering you and your content like this slow burn over like all of the internet over time. First, it was a Gama Sutra article here back when it was called that. Then it was a YouTube talk there. Just recently, I was catching up on Ryan Clark's Clark Tank, and he's talking to the chat, and it's the usual names you'd know. There's Lars Doucet's in there, Jake Briquette's in there. And I'm just like, you know, cooking. I hear him talking about Chris. And I'm like, wait a minute. Is that Chris Zukowski? It was totally you in there chatting up with Ryan Clark, solving all these marketing problems. You're everywhere. You even had these two GDC talks planned for this most recent GDC. The pandemic shut that down. But you are the kind of person who takes a negative, spins it into a positive. You made the Staying Inside conference. How amazing. I want to hear all about it.
Excellent. Yeah. No, it wasn't the pandemic. It was me. I got the COVID. I got it. So I waited 3 years to the date, 1 week before GDC was supposed to happen. Actually, 2 days before GDC was supposed to happen. Had a sore throat. I had to cancel. But my Airbnb person, they said, sure, we'll just refund you all your money, which is amazing. So there are nice people out there. But anyway, congrats. So I couldn't give these talks. It takes a long time to make a GDC talk, like all the research, all the practicing, all the negotiations with the GDC organization. So I was just like, well, they wouldn't let me do it remote. So rather than complain on Twitter, I just was like, okay, who says you have to decide who gets to make a conference or not? I'm going to make a conference. That's right. I am. And then I just spun it up in this bedroom. And it was about a month later, I just ran this conference and it was just me. I picked, I gave my two talks, and then I did a, what I call a Steam page teardown, where people submit their Steam pages. I do a live critique of it. I'd be very nice, you know, not too mean. And then I was like, you know, there's some other people I want to talk to. And it turns out on the internet, you can just go up to people and say, can I just talk to you? And they'll say yes. Yeah. So I got interviews with five other people, Cassia Curran, who does a VR marketing. Because apparently the VR market's hot if you go in the right places, and she's found where to do that. Mm. I got a lawyer. There was a lawyer who gave a talk. They're all QAs, not talks. And just to like, what should we watch out for when we do signings? Other things about how to do tech talk from the guy that did the Devolver TikTok. His name's Jared. He does TikTok for Devolver. So I just asked him all the secrets, like what are the actual secrets? And then finally, something about visual novels, like how to the romance dating games are actually very keen on their audience. They understand exactly what their audience wants. And I feel like all other genres on Steam, the creators don't actually know their audience. And so they make a lot of missteps. I think that's one of the leading problems indies have, is they don't know their audience. Whereas visual romance novelists, they know their audience so well, they can create stuff just for them. And so I brought her on, very underrated talk. Well, it was nothing was rated, but she was super good. And then finally a talk with Davian Gooden, and he is just like a wizard at doing what's called biz dev, where it's like you just talk to people and they give you money. It's amazing. So all those talks, they're all recorded. You can watch them anywhere. They're on for sale for now. So actually, for anybody watching this, I'll create a special link. I'll link it to you. I'll just knock off $10 if you use this coupon code.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. I just came up with that great idea. I spent so much time pitching this. So what I'll do is I'll just send you a link. And if you just include that link in the YouTube comments down below, or you just email me or DM me and say, I saw you, you know, I saw this podcast. You said you'd give me a coupon. I'll give you a coupon. So just DM me at Adventure Mountain on Twitter.
That's amazing. Real-time marketing happening right here. You heard it here first, folks. Mention Make the Game and save some money. I'm behind. I have to catch up on it. So I'll probably be using that coupon as well.
Do it.
That's awesome. I can't wait to catch up on it. So I thought this would be a good place to start. A question kind of about starting out with marketing. So this is from my friend Jeremy from the Vladria Discord asks, what's the easiest thing to do that nobody ever does when starting out marketing?
I think the main thing is you want to get, well, I don't know if nobody ever does, but okay, so here's what. A lot of this stuff is not like revolutionary. I think the best thing is get your demo up, start contacting streamers as early as possible. I think that right there, those two things are going to give you the best bang for your buck as far as like impact that you could have. Now, a lot of people do that. That's why I'm saying like, oh, well, then nobody does. But I think getting your Steam page up, getting your demo out and contacting streamers early in your marketing process is like one of the best things you can do.
Love that. Good advice. I will be following that myself. Here's one that I think is really interesting because, you know, the games industry is very hit driven, right? And especially indies, you hear these crazy stories about like, oh, I made $1 million. Like you got blog posts on how to make, how to market a game.com. What was it? Dome Keeper had like $1 million a week or something. And it just blows the mind. But I think for a lot of us, you know, that's not necessary, right? Like we could build up to that. So my friend and YouTuber extraordinaire and how to make a video game all by yourself reader, Thomas Stewart has a great question. Are there any modest strategies for devs to earn a decent living? And we're talking like 10K, maybe up to 100K most for just like solid, reliable games on Steam. Is that a thing at all?
Yeah. And I'm going to dedicate more of my blog to kind of covering these stories. But here's, I think, the formula. I've identified a couple devs that have done something similar to what you're talking about. Here's kind of the formula. Okay. Stick to a genre that Steam likes, not platformers. Steam does not like pixel art platformers. I'm sorry if you're making a pixel art platformer. But stick to genres that Steam likes and then slowly release more and more games. Now, in the beginning, you're not going to do very well. You're probably your first game's going to earn that 10,000 you were talking about. But keeping the same genre, you're going to reuse code. And so you want to release your games frequently. Like I always tell indie devs, keep it small. Release like 3 games in your first year. Very small. And you got to learn how to release fast. Release these small games over time. And they kind of snowball. And you start to build that audience off of that. Steam actually promotes games that have released more than games that are upcoming. And so what you're doing is you're using all their past games to market your new games. And they're on these kind of tight niches. And you just kind of release them over time. Now, somebody is going to say, well, that's impossible. Look at somebody named Cozy B Games. She is like so smart about this stuff. She releases management sim games, kind of wholesome management sim games. She started her career. She started like 3 games in the first year, then another one in 6 months, and then another one in 6 months. And now she's working on one that's like a horse game that's taken her like probably a year and a half to make. That's her longest game. She has released more games than some people release one game. They like spend all this time making one game. She's already doing such great work releasing all these small games. Highly underrated indie dev. Cozy B Games. Check them out.
Cozy B Games. Great tip. I will look that up. I'll throw one in there too. Anyone look up Blobfish Games. We've seen Brotato is a huge runaway hit in the kind of bullet heaven genre. I think this is their 3rd game on Steam, and you can kind of see this modest spike that kind of jumps way up with Brotato. Great answer. I'll be looking into that for sure. Here's a question about early access, which is, I get a lot of questions about this, and I think it's really mysterious to a lot of developers, like what exactly it means and how players feel about it, right? I stumbled upon Steam's official documentation recently. I found this was fascinating. Is apparently they will email wishlisters when your game launches into early access, and they'll do it again when you leave early access, which, you know, brings up the question. Like the normal convention right now, it's recommended that you only get one launch. Like that's the best practice, the kind of common wisdom we've all come to, right? Why is that then? Because like the emails will go out, but are there other discovery algorithm things, other discovery channels we don't get into in early access? And once we go into launch, why do we only get one launch?
Okay, so it's a little bit complicated. Yeah. Early access, you kind of split your launch, and I'll go into that. But really, you only get one launch. I still say that because when you launch, everything fires. So if somebody follows your game or your studio or your publisher, one email goes out when you launch. So you get a huge bunch of traffic for that. When you launch, you also are discounting it at the lowest amount. You're probably discounting 10 to 15, maybe 20%, somewhere in that range. So your game is the most expensive. And there's this thing called popular, upcoming, and then new and trending, which are two widgets on the front page of Steam. And if you hit the right numbers, you get in both of those. And you can only get in those like one time, those two widgets. So basically, all this positive energy comes from Steam in that first launch. And so that's your best shot to make that impression. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the most money you're going to make. But what Steam does is it gives you all this attention if you play your cards right. And it'll say, here it is. Here's your moment on the stage, game. And you are on stage. And you better deliver. Deliver at that time. Because if you don't, Valve looks to see whether you made money in a short period of time. I don't know what time it is. I don't know how much money it is. But there's a certain amount of money they like to see. If you don't hit those numbers, they're like, thanks for playing. You're going in the basement. And they don't say that. It's kind of a passive-aggressive relationship you have with Steam. And they just don't promote you anymore. And I get people that are like, Chris, why isn't my game selling? It's like, well, you didn't hit the numbers. And that's kind of also why there's no middle tier. Like you mentioned, Brotato. That game's hot. That game's not a middle tier game. What happens is it made enough. And Steam's like, this is a hot game. We're going to elevate it to the top. And they just put all their front page featuring all these widgets everywhere. They recommend it everywhere. And it just moves up to the top. So your game either fails or it succeeds on Steam.
Yeah.
And what's happening is at that launch, they're testing you to see, are you converting enough? And if you do, they put you up there. Now, kind of caveat on early access, they kind of split that. They do give you two emails. There is a thing when you go to early access and then what most people kind of call 1.0, that's kind of split in half. And you can get into popular upcoming when you're due early access, but you can't get into new and trending. This is why I say they kind of split your launch. Okay. When you launch into 1.0, then you are eligible for new and trending widget. Those are the two widgets I mentioned that are the front page featuring for Steam. So essentially they kind of divided it. Yes, they give you two emails, but here's the thing, folks. I don't like early access, especially for your first game. I know this wasn't quite the question. I don't think it's worth it. I know you're like, well, you get two emails. That's awesome. Here's the thing. People on Steam are very, very suspicious of early access games. And so they always take this wait and see approach. And those people that do opt in, they get like super animated. They're like, why haven't you updated this month? You haven't sent an email. So what you've done is you've signed yourself up to community management while you're still trying to develop your game. And so there's this fine line that you're trying to walk is you want to give enough content so people are like, good, but you don't want to give so much content because if you wait to develop all that content, you've given up the magic, supposed magic of early access, which is I got to make my game while still getting money. And what happens is people get into underwater situations where, okay, they worked on their game, they put it out for early access launch, and it didn't do so good. They didn't do the math. Like the math doesn't work out. Like, oh my God, my sales are terrible.
Right.
What do I do now? And now you've also got people going, where's my updates? And you're like, it doesn't make financial sense. I've just launched it. It wasn't bad. It's not going to get any better. Yikes. And so you're now stuck underwater. And you're like, you got people yelling at you at one side. You got your financials where you're like, we can't even make any more money. And so a lot of people just ghost. Most early access games never get to their 1.0 launch because the devs are just like, I'm just going to walk away from this game. It didn't make enough money. I got people yelling at me. Sayonara. So I think early access is a very risky bet. They make it sound, I wish it wasn't called early access. That sounds so pleasant. Like, oh, early. Oh, it's early access. You're just getting an early peek. It's not. I wish they called it like hard mode. Don't do this indies. This is for advanced developers only. I wish that's what it was called. But early access is what we got. So it tricks people into thinking it's early access. That's easy. It's not.
Right. Oof, brutal. Yeah, I've been in early access before. Didn't go great. I am thinking about going into it again, partially just to like...
But you can.
Yeah, that's I'll have to let that percolate though. That is a pretty brutal comments about it.
I just think for your first game, don't do it. It's too hard. It's just so hard to make a game. I say maybe for your second or third game, you've been through this before.
This is about my second or third games.
It's hard. Early access is hard. You've done it once before, so you know a little bit more, but yeah, if you're a dev watching this, you're like, I'm going to release my first game early.
If you don't.
Oh, don't. It's so hard. It is so hard. So hard.
Okay. I like it. Give me some real things to think about. Something to chew on here.
I'm here to break hearts. That's what you brought me on here for.
Chris breaking hearts, Sukowski. I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's what they call me in high school.
All right. So this one's kind of related to early access, I think. Maybe more about kind of spreading development over time. But basically, localization. This is an interesting one because I've seen some advice bubbling up. Maybe it came from you. I don't know. Maybe it came... Like, I follow so many people. There's so much good advice coming in. But I saw someone say, basically, if you don't translate or localize into at least, like, simplified Chinese, maybe some other languages. Depends on your genre and stuff like that. But, like, I heard German is a big one. But what I've heard is that you're kind of leaving money on the table, right? Because some devs had comparable sales across English and then to simplified Chinese is what I heard. That makes it very interesting. I don't think a lot of indies are going to do it. It's probably kind of a higher bar for getting good translations, at least currently and stuff like that. So it's an appealing marketing angle, but the timing becomes really challenging, right? Because do you want to localize early and get, and start absorbing those Steam wish lists, or then you have to kind of maybe relocalize the stuff that you've inevitably been changing while you develop the game, right? Is there a good best practice for when you should pull that trigger and just fire off and get your localized, get your translation strings and stuff like that? Is there a good time, or is it just something you got to play by ear?
Just want to clarify, are you talking about translating your game or translating your Steam page? Oh,
yeah, I mean, that's a great question there. Because they are different things, right? Like, is it a valid thing to translate your page but not your game?
Yes, so here's what I would suggest. Some people know going in, I can't translate this game. It's got like 100, it's like basically a Tolkien like box set of novels worth of text that I have translated. There's no way in hell that I can translate this. If you're that case, sure, don't translate. I'm small indie, I've never done this before. Don't translate that. You're probably not going to get that much. Here's what I would suggest though, for everybody. Translate just your Steam page. You can do that. Steam will know. There's some check boxes to say whether your game is translated or just your Steam page. And Steam will put up a warning that'll say, like, this game's Steam page is translated, but not the game. Or the developer hasn't indicated that this game has been translated. You'll see this warning. And it'll be localized to whatever language that person is.
Mm.
And what you can do is you can see whether your game is getting a percentage of the market. So, for instance, if it's a strategy game, you're probably going to get a higher percentage of German players. German players just love strategy games. Mm. So you can look and see like, whoa, when we translate our page, we got so many wish lists from Germany. You can actually go in through Steamworks. It's very complicated. I think search my blog for it. I think I tell how to do it, how to find out what the percentage of wish lists are coming from.
Hmm.
They don't put it in an easy place. Right. But anyway, you can see whether there's an outsized interest in your game from that region. Sometimes I find the Korean and Chinese streamers have a big effect on the market. So if some Korean or Chinese streamer plays your demo or your game, they can really boost the wish list from that. They take a huge signal. Gamers from those two countries really take a huge interest from their streamers. You'll see stuff where you're like, why am I getting all these wish lists? And then search Bilibili, I think, whatever the Chinese YouTube is, you typically got covered by a Chinese streamer. That's usually what happens. Nice. I think it's Bilibili. But anyway, so I recommend, and Steam, I just mirror what Valve tells us, is translate Chinese, Korean, and Japanese first, because those players don't typically read English.
Mm.
Whereas most European players are willing to translate into, or willing to, you know, they can usually read English for this stuff. So they're more flexible about that. But if you've got a limited budget, translate your Steam page to those Asian languages first, and then see what happens. The other thing is, I've mentioned those two widgets, popular, upcoming, and new and trending. Those are localized based on the regions that are translated. If you don't translate your page, your game will not show up in popular, upcoming, and new and trending. So at least before you launch your game or get close to that launch period, which is like 2 to 3 weeks before you launch, make sure you have all the translations up, because those localized pages, those ranking charts are localized. So you want to get in those, because those are huge boosts to visibility, huge boosts. And if you're not translated, you don't even show up in that. So even if you're making a strategy game for the German market and that you didn't translate to German, you're not going to show up in the popular upcoming German page. So you got to do it.
Wow, that is fantastic. What like gold nuggets that is. So you're saying if you translate just your page before you launch, then your Steam page will appear in some of those coveted discovery widgets. So even if your game isn't translated.
Correct.
That is beautiful. Wow.
And so Valve even recommends this. This isn't like some weird hack. Valve recommends that. There's like, put it in, translate your pages, see if you're getting interest from people from those countries. And if you are, then consider allocating budget or doing something for it, or even messaging to your team, to your public, and saying, hey, we're not doing German yet, but it's going to be there on May 30th, 2024, or whatever, you know?
Stay tuned. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, there's a surprising amount of stuff just right there on the Steam documentation. Like, there's certainly a lot of things that indies, especially like yourself, will kind of go through, and you do the work to kind of extract, like drag that information out of Steam by doing, analytics and stuff. But then sometimes they'll be like,
Right there in the Steam docs. Yes, we will email you when you launch. Or like, yes, we will email people when you hit 20% or more of a discount. It's like, oh, like I thought this was some black magic we all had to go learn. You know, you have to watch 17 YouTube talks, GDC talks to get this information. But a lot of it's right there on their docs.
That's right. When all else fails, read the instructions, right?
I love it. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's basically my job is I read Steam documentation for other people. It's but people just don't want to read stuff. So here I am. If people read stuff, I wouldn't have a job.
That's fair. It's almost like legal stuff, right? Like the documentation's all there. You can go look it up. Like trademark stuff, 18 pages of dense documentation, or you can, you know, pay your lawyer friend, do the good work for you. I love that. Here's a good one. So howtomarketagame.com is so dense. It has so much good information. I was browsing it just the other day, and I was opening new tabs for articles that I, one, hadn't read, two, found interesting, and three, was relevant to me at the time. I had like two dozen tabs open. I was going through
just excellent.
Amazing website. That said, are there any marketing questions that you've heard, but you haven't been able to find a solid answer for? And so we don't have an article from you yet. Is there anything that you're still letting percolate that you haven't solved yet that you're kind of grinding on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm doing the early access one. I mean, a lot of this stuff is just hand waving. Like I'm working on some stuff for early access. Like how many games fail? I don't like to just, with my advice, I don't just like to say vibes. I don't do vibes because vibes are usually wrong. And so that's been my bread and butter is I'm like, okay, there's some people have vibes about this thing. I'm going to go actually do the math because it's not that hard to do the math to figure out if these vibes are correct or not.
Yeah.
And so I'm in the process of killing vibes right now for early access. Right now, my vibes or my gut, we used to say gut, but the kids like to say vibes. So I'm going with the kids saying vibes.
Yeah.
The vibes on early access is, I don't know, it's two sides. My vibes are saying this is terrible. Kids vibes that are releasing new games say it's awesome. Early access is awesome. And so I'm trying to do the math to figure out which one. Here's the thing is, whatever the math turns out to be, I will jump on that vibes trail, whatever. But based on what I see, my vibes are telling me early access is a trap that we get ourselves into. And so I'm working on more data of like, hey, this is your percentage chance of succeeding if you do early access, that sort of stuff. So, I don't know of anybody else who's done the actual math. A lot of people say yes or no, but I want to give a definite answer. And the funny thing is, like, if you go to these Steam Q&As, and they're like, is my game good for Q&A or for early access in these Q&As? Valve always goes like, well, just ask yourself, is your game good for early access? And I'm like, that's such a circular question. Like, who would, like, what? I'm asking you, if I knew, I wouldn't ask you if my game's good for early access. But they're like, ask yourself, is the game good for early access? So I'm going to answer that for y'all. I'm going to figure out what's good for early access.
Great answer. Yeah, I would like to know. Because there's always, you know, survivorship bias, right? And everybody always points like, oh, you say don't do early access, but then Vampire Survivors was early access, or, you know, Nuclear Throne had thousands of, you know, there's always those stories, right? And it does look appealing, especially like when it's done right. Like early access can feel like this, oh, it's this constant in development exciting thing, there's always new updates happening, but you do make very compelling points.
Yeah, I followed a lot of games which what I say got over their skis underwater for early access, and nobody hears about them because they failed. And if you go through the comments, and part of this research I'm doing is just collecting these comments, the people are so mean to the developer. They're like, where'd you go? We're tracking you down because you failed on this game and you're not updating it anymore. And I'm like, Jesus, this is like poor dev. And so I'm going to bring some of those to the fore. And this is that survivorship bias. You don't hear about those devs that realized, you know what, we're not making enough money, we just got to walk away from this game and never 1.0 it. And that's what I want to kind of bring. Those are the vibes that I see, just because I look at every single game that releases on Steam.
Interesting. Yeah, full disclosure, I have a failed early access game in my backlog. It's years away, and I like depression, like years of sadness about it. I don't want to talk about it really. We won't get deep into it, but like if you go and Google the game, the first post that appears is my big apology, like hat in hand, like kind of sob story. It sucks. And like I'm not eager to get back into that boat. But like if I'm being honest, I find all of Steam terrifying. So I'm not anxious to get back into any of it. So I'm like, hey, they're already shark infested waters. Like I might as well just I don't know. But yeah, you are making me rethink all that.
I mean, the main thing here's, for some reason, early access feels like a promise. So people feel like they work up in their brain like, oh, this, you'll see reviews that are like, oh, with just a little bit more time, this game could be good, because they're imagining in their brains, they're filling in the blanks, but you might not be able to fill in their blanks. And so there's this particular thing about early access where you're selling a dream and it might not come true for them. And then they get really mad. Whereas a game that's failed that you just release like totally normally, just straight up, just no fancy early access, it's like take it or leave it.
It is what it is.
If you don't like it, get out of here.
Yeah.
And so I find less stress. I mean, it's still going to be stress, but there's not that weird psycho aspect of it where you're killing somebody's dreams because you didn't fulfill their fantasy of your game. And I think that is absent. And so really, when you mention, oh, I'm scared of Steam, really what happens, nobody gets mad except for early access. I mean, most people just like forget about your game. What's the opposite of love? It's not hate. It's, you know, ambivalence or whatever.
Yeah.
Most people are just ambivalent about your game. That's usually what's going to happen. If you've never released a game on Steam, most of what happens is nobody cares. that's an overwhelming feeling.
Yeah, I was on a self-publishing subreddit talking about my book, How to Make a Video Game All by Yourself. Here it is, guys. But somebody was talking about how they had written 7 books and hadn't published any of them. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, just please publish them. And I was like, the good news is, they were like, I'm worried no one's going to care. And I was like, the good news is, if nobody notices, then nobody noticed that nobody noticed. Nobody cares. Like, you know, you release a game zero, like, is anyone sitting there like gathering around it and dogpiling on it? Oh, this game, look how badly this game did. No, they don't care. They move on.
Yeah.
They forgot about it instantly. So like, there's almost no risk in that regard. Like, just make your game, write your book, do your thing, right?
Do it.
Speaking of like developer, I have one more early access thing. So here's in my head, I'm trying to get over, maybe I should not do early access, but I have one more question is, when you see a game that launches even in 1.0 and it doesn't get updates, and you know, I have the Steam plugin that shows me when the last package was updated and stuff like that, right? And you'll see in the community, you know, dead game. I know you've seen it, dead game, right? And it's, hey, like, we launched it. We fixed a couple of launch bugs, and yeah, it's been 2 months, but it was done. In my head, I was like, Witchmore, my game, to me, is going to be this thing that kind of sits there, and I will be updating it occasionally. I think I will be following it, and I'll probably put in some updates. I'll get some ideas. Like, I love the game. I have hundreds of ideas, so I was like, I might just update it occasionally. In my head, early access is a good answer to dead game, right? Because I'm going to be updating anyway. Is that anything, or should I just push past that and like update the game if I want and just make it 1.0 and forget about early access? That's the last early access question I got for you today.
Okay, so there's two options. One is early access, and option two is just do a full launch with some updates. Is that the two options?
Yeah, pretty much. I think so.
I mean, you've heard my rant on early access. I won't do the rant anymore.
Okay.
But I think that in general, even if you do early access, players still expect the game to be updated for a long period of time.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of how Steam fans are. That's the expectation they've built into it. There's a couple things. Is you're going to be constantly updating your game, and you're going to be constantly discounting it. Those are kind of just what fans have learned to expect. I mean, we can complain about it, we can write tweets about it, but that's just what Steam culture is. And so I do think you need to do some updates. And part of the culture is the algorithm is built for that too. Like, the reason games do free updates is they get free visibility from Steam. Once they've, you know, I said, once you've proven that you're a good game, that Steam likes you, do updates. And the fans do reward you. Sometimes they'll call you a good dev. They're like, oh, this is a good dev. When you do those updates, and sometimes, you know, just pop an update in like a couple of years later, they love you. They think that's awesome. So just understand, it's like a culture, like it's a country's culture. Just think of it that way. And their culture is you do updates. Doesn't have to be all the time, but they do like post-launch updates.
Okay, that's fair. Well, I'll put this question out there. If you're listening to this right now, advise me, send me an email, tweet at me at Rictor, get in my Discord, comment on YouTube. Tell me what you think. Should I go into early access, or I should just go for 1.0? I don't know. Chris, give me a lot to think about here, guys. Here's an interesting one. You and I were talking about genre. Genre is a hot button topic, right? You were saying how people get really, they get like angry if you'll say a certain genre.
you know, isn't viable, or if you'll say like indies are better off going for this genre or something. What do you think causes that? That like kind of anger that boils up from talking about genre and what works and what doesn't on Steam?
Okay, so what I do is, and I'm just kind of the messenger for this. I just look at Steam and I see how many games get reviews, and then I just say like, okay, what genre is this game? How many reviews did it get? What genre is this game? How many reviews did I get? And I can see the games in some genres get so many reviews, and then other games get so many reviews, so few reviews. And that's basically what I'm doing. And it's not like I'm doing some weird analysis. And so when I put out the research on Twitter or something, I always get, I mean, a lot of people like it. They're like, oh, thanks, Chris, this is really illuminating. A lot of people are like, no, and they'll like start to like pick apart, like doing the most science to like debunk this stuff. I'm like, well, I wish you did this kind of research when you were launching your, you know, when you're picking your genre that you wanted. For some reason, they don't do that. They only do it when I write these blog posts. But anyway, so basically, I do think that I can understand it. It was like, you work really hard. You put your dreams on this thing. You must have loved this game, this idea for this game, and you're making it. And then here comes this weird guy on the internet that says your ideas and your dreams were wrong. I'm not. I can see that logic flow. And I'm sorry. I'm not trying to say like your game sucks. But here's what I say. And then people are like, well, what about Celeste? That's a pixel art platformer that did well. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But it's what I'm saying is it's the odds. And when nobody knows anything, I can't say like, yes, I can't look at a design document and say, this game's going to be a million seller. I can't. Nobody actually knows this stuff. Even Valve tells us, we don't know. Even if you come to us and say you have 300,000 wishlists, we don't know if you're going to be a bestseller. I mean, if you look, Valve even made like a couple failed games. They have perfect data on what's selling, and they still failed with, well, I mean, it's failed is relative for them, but that, what's that card game, like Valorant or something? I can't remember what. So they don't know. Nobody knows. But what I'm saying, it's like odds. And so if you want to make a pixel art platformer, God love you. But your odds are like going to win the lottery to get a game that succeeds there. And somebody's like, oh, well, a guy won the lottery last week. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but only one guy won it.
Yeah.
And the millions of odds aren't there. So anytime I say like pixel art platformers don't do very well, it's very risky. They're like, well, there's this one guy. I know, it's just like the lottery. There's always one guy that wins the lottery every week. So basically, some genres like pixel art platformers, puzzle games, party games to a point, basically 3D platformers, anything very linear are very hard to do well with Steam for an indie. There's just a number of factors. Match 3, for some reason, everybody makes Match 3 and they don't do well at all. Those games are what I call very, very risky. If you pick that genre, just don't be mad if your game doesn't sell well. Just know like, well, I tried to play the lottery and I didn't win. But there are other genres. I mean, it's still risky. This isn't like a safe investment making an indie game. But there are other genres that Steam players are begging us to make. They're like, can you please, please just make these? And like, no, we're going to make a pixel art platform. They're like, oh, I wanted one of these. And what those genres that Steam just can't get enough of, they're like, please make more of these, are like city builders, crafting games, open world survival craft, colony sims, a management sim, simulation games where you're like, you've got a job, where you're like some weird job and you're doing that job, like Power Washer Simulator. All these kind of like, I call them buildy, crafty, sandboxy games. They're just like, you're dropped in the sandbox. There's no like definite narrative. You can opt into the narrative if you want, but it's a lot of like playground stuff. You're crafting, combining, mixing, matching, deep strategy games. Those are what Steam wants. And the players are just begging us to make games. They're like, can you please just make us some more of these? And we're like, no, we're going to just stick to our puzzle games. We're going to make more puzzle games. And I'm just like, guys, they're asking for it over there. So that's kind of why my general thought on genre and why it's so important, just to like do the basic math. I'm not saying like do market research to figure out if your main character should have blue hair or red shirt or blue shirt or red hair. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like just general vibes. Like, look, Steam wants buildy, crafty simulation games. They don't want linear narrative platformy type of games. Well, before I say, speaking of narrative, visual novels are actually quite viable. Before I say that, but visual novels are quite viable.
Okay.
If you keep the scope small.
All right. Bam. Okay. Well, everybody, we heard that list of genres. Those are the ones to keep in mind. It's so funny that you mentioned that people get mad. You and I both have pixel art platformers on Steam. I don't think either one of them did terribly well. So it's like we love them enough to make them, but I don't think either of us recommends making them. And then when people point to Celeste, I don't think what they factor in is that game was basically made by like an indie super band, right? Like I was watching some Coachella a couple weekends ago, and like there was this band made of like seven, I don't follow any music, that like indie super band, like you know, the lead singer from this band is on drums, the lead bassist, like they all gathered. That is Celeste. Like I can't remake Celeste. No, like, you know, it's not reproducible for most of us. So it's not a great game to examine, right? So, games marketing to me is so fascinating because it's kind of made up of a million little rules to remember, right? And like, so people who listen to my podcast know I'm going to mention Spelunky. It's going to happen. It's been zero episodes since I've mentioned Spelunky. One of the things that's so interesting to me about Spelunky is it's all about memorizing these little rules that are all context-based, right? Like, you know what happens when you swing your whip, but what happens when you swing your whip and you're hanging on a cliff ledge? It's very different and it can get you killed, right? There's all these little things to memorize. And marketing to me, you know, if you're going to tweet something, the rules about what you should do is different than on Reddit, is different than on YouTube. And like a lot of that really matters if that's what you're doing day to day. So there's all this noise to hear about. There's hundreds of articles to read. There's hours and hours of videos. Let's cut through all that. Let's give indies something nice and clear and concise. What's the one piece of critical advice for an indie dev looking to market their game?
Okay. It's a marathon. It's not going to be last minute. So plan for a while. I say get your Steam page up nice and early. Get it up and just start trying out some platforms to see if they work. Like, see if you can do, if you got a TikTok friendly game, see if you have a Twitter friendly game, see if you have this, because there's certain games that do well on these different platforms. Pretty much TikTok and Twitter are your only social media that works. Instagram just doesn't work. Reddit works too. So try them out. See if you've got a game that kind of hits that interest. And then whatever it is, double down on that one and just learn the deep, deep algorithms for that one. And you might do better. But it's usually, if you've got a visually impressive game, like 3D, beautiful effects, beautiful animations, or some unique art style, like it's painted. I just saw that game that's made out of like cross stitch art,
blowing embroidery. Up Twitter. Yeah.
Huge. Yeah. Those type of games that are immediately visually amazing do well on TikTok, Twitter. Games that are like 3D, dark, grimy looking cool games do better on Reddit. So once you find that, you do good. Now, if you have none of those, you basically have to go with a demo. Like if there are games like Domekeeper, we just talked about, that game's good looking. It's a good looking game, but it's not like the visuals are so revolutionary that you're like, oh my God, what is this game?
Yeah.
Like if you show a screenshot, people are like, oh, okay, it looks like a typical pixel art indie game. But when you played it, you were like, the gameplay loops and everything were perfectly tuned. It was so perfect. You didn't realize it was an amazing game until you played it. So if you don't have a visual game, put out a demo as soon as you can and start reaching out to streamers and let people just play the game. And then they're like, oh my God, this game's so fun. They'll recommend it to the friends and streamers will recommend it to their audience. That I'd say is the core thing is figure out whether you're a game that's fun to look at or fun to play. Some of them are both, but then double down on that one thing.
So is this a good strategy for an indie? You come up with the concept, you go with your vibes of what you kind of want to make and what you think could do well. You go and you pay the $100 for Steam and you spend the, I don't know, 1 to 3 hours, you make a decent Steam page. It's not amazing. You have a decent enough trailer, kind of like my trailer is kind of garbage, if I'm being honest. It doesn't have exciting music. All it shows is little clips. So like, here's some fighting, here's a cat, and then it ends. There's no story, there's no thrill. I don't even have the game loops, but it's up there. So is this a good strategy? You pay the money, you get the Steam page up, and then you see how it does, right? And maybe you do that 2 or 3 times, and then you chase after the one. Like maybe none of them take off. You just keep grilling or keep grinding, I mean. But is that a good strategy? I mean, because like $100 per page, plus like you got to put together at least enough tech to make the screenshots happen, to make the trailer. Like it doesn't have to be a playable game. It doesn't even have to be a video game. It can just be something that shows pixels moving on a screen, right? But like that seemed like a lot of effort, but you know, maybe it's worthwhile because we're going to be spending months or years in our game. Like we want to know for sure if it has something there, right? Like, is that the way to do it? You spend that initial investment of time and money before going further?
In theory, yes. I love that. However, specifically with Valve and Steam, don't do that because actually this company from Poland called Playway, they actually got in trouble from Steam from Valve for doing this thing where they put up these fake games and they would just spend it, and they saw which games got the most wish lists, and then they would just delete the page or cancel it and just do the other ones. And Steam caught on to them because they were doing so many. I don't know what that limit is. Like, oh, if you do three, it's okay, but if you do 10, that's a problem. You want to be on the good side of Steam, especially for indies. But I like that idea of just gauging whether there's interest first, because that is, for all these marketing things we talk about, that is the number one thing. It is your game. That is the center thing. If you've got, I can't market a game. We're not brainwashing people when we market a game. They have to like the game first. It's just we're finding the audience. That's all marketing is. And if nobody wants the game, nobody thinks it's a cool looking game or it's an interesting concept, it doesn't matter. It has to have that magic where you like, oh, it's a game where you're a squirrel with a gun. And everybody's like, I got to see that. That is magic. And so what you should do, and here's an alternative, and this is actually what Domekeeper did. Developers were doing for Domekeeper, they just did a bunch of game jams and they uploaded their builds to Twitch or to Itch. They uploaded it to Itch and they just looked. They did it like once a month. They'd put up a game that they did a game jam on. And they just saw there was one game of theirs that got like four times the traffic of the other one.
Right.
Because it was fully playable. And people were like, hey, can you make some more levels for this game? Like, people were just out of the blue emailing them. That is a good sign. That is a good sign.
Yeah.
It's, and you can't, again, like, I don't have the answers. People come to me and they're like, Chris, this is a good idea for a game. I don't know. I literally do not know. Nobody knows. You just have to put it out there and see what the public likes. And I think Itch might be a good way. And normally Itch, if you try and sell a game, you're not going to sell anything. But if you upload a free version of a game to Itch, that's actually a pretty good thing. Peglin also did the same thing.
Yeah.
They uploaded a bunch of like game jam games and Peglin was on there and people kept emailing the guy about Peglin. And he was like, I think I should make this game. They keep asking if there's going to be upgrades to this game. I'm like, maybe that's a sign. So my recommendation is if you're there and you're like, is this a good idea for a game? Just make it, make a small game jam version. It takes you a month maybe to make, upload it to Steam or to, I'm sorry, scratch that. Itch. Upload that to Itch. See if, and you won't know if Chris was like, how many downloads do I get? I don't know. So do it four or five times and whichever one gets the most, you're going to see if you've got it. One is going to go like so much more, like an order of magnitude. And then you're going to get feedback from people. There's no system to game. People just be like, hey, are you making more for that game? I really liked it. That's a good sign. If you get that,
right?
Those are the good signs. And that might be the alternative to your $100 plan. Cause I would normally recommend doing the $100, just throw up a bunch, see which one gets the most wish lists in a week and then make that one. But Valve is kind of like, stop using our system as some sort of weird beta test and they'll kind of kick you off. They want to keep the, what people call like junk games or those garbage games. They want to keep that down. So they're kind of sensitive about just uploading test stuff.
Yeah. Valve doesn't want our free money. they don't need it or want it. Oh, that's an amazing place for them to be in. You know, Itch is interesting because it's $0, right? And something I think you probably said in one of your articles is that, you know, even though something like Screenshot Saturday or Itch might not explode with popularity, the scouts watch it, right? And it seems like that's how the Domekeeper folks connected with their publisher was a hit tweets, but, you know, probably also those Itch numbers back that up. That's really good advice, and that would bypass that $100 price tag on Steam, which, you know, would really add up if you're trying to do this in an iterative way. Chris, your content you write is so good, it has changed the way I speak. I use the word anchor constantly. I now think about games in terms of feathers or bowling balls. I will put links to this stuff in the show notes. There's going to be just a ridiculous amount of stuff. I've been telling indies about your amazing work, and I will continue to do that for a long time. I recommend everybody right now go to howtomarketagame.com, subscribe to your newsletter, and we are going to all check out the hot new, the Staying Inside conference. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, and don't forget, coupon for the Inside conference. Just check it out. I'll be giving away a $10 coupon if you just use this coupon code, because this is great. I mean, Matt's awesome, and I want to support him, and you've built a great community here. So
thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Make use of that exclusive Make the Game coupon code. Head over to progamemarketing.com, click on Staying Inside Microconference, and when you check out, use the coupon code Make the Game, one word, or just click on the link you can find on valadria.com. Thanks for listening. Buy my book.
Excellent.